It is time now for Tim, Luke, and Greg Schramm, the appraisal guys, the Frick and Frack of Nick and Knack. You'll find them on the web at tqag.com. Right now, I only have one of them on the line. Tim, where's Greg?
You may only have one on the line. Greg is in Ohio. And I sent him a text last night. I said, don't forget, we have a radio show in the morning. And I just texted him this morning, are you awake? And I did not get a response.
I don't think so. So
I'm thinking it's us.
Well, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for Tim, Luke, and Greg Schramm right. Sleeping in Ohio.
Okay. Well, He's spending the week with his mom, and he flew in, and yesterday he texted me. He said it's 39 degrees outside but 80 degrees inside.
That's right. That'll definitely put you to sleep.
Right. So you know how those visits go.
Now, does she have a fireplace in her house as well?
No.
Well, it's a good thing, because if she had the fire on, he'd never get up.
It would be 100. I know. That's he'd just right. be nodding off he'd, in front of
right.
it.
He'd think he got drugged.
I know. Right. Yes. So.
So here you are. Are you? You're a little throaty though. Did you? Is it just morning, or did you recatch your?
No, I'm actually on the tail end and just getting over it, but. This is, you know, because I had the flu and I'm also with my asthma, my allergist told me it is going to take just a little, it's going to take a lot longer for it to just work through. And actually, today was a good day.
Okay.
I got up, did my 3.5 miles. I'm working up back up to 4 and getting, you know, so I did that and I didn't have to stop. So we're on an upward trend. It's just, this is what I have to live with. It's a little bit of a wheeze. I get a little catch. So.
And last question before we, last health question.
Jump in?
Yeah.
Before we go to space.
Is this the tail end of Atlanta?
Or yeah, well, yes. Okay. So it was Atlanta, and then I had a little bit of a cold. Before Greg, 2 weeks ago. So it's just kind of working through that and getting over that. And I'm glad Greg is gone. Actually, Greg, when I talked to him, he had a little bit of congestion and all of this. I said, you go away. I'll stay here as well. We'll get better, because I think we're just reinfecting each other.
It is possible. All right.
Right.
So now, right. now
so
let's go.
What I wanted to talk about, let's go to space. Is, you know what, Marshall? Try to get Greg. He's calling me on my cell phone. Like, he knows I'm in the middle of a show. How am I? I'll say, like, excuse me, can you hold Jill? Let me pick this call up. No.
I will try to add him as you are going on.
You know, he just cannot cope with being left out.
He can't, he's got to speak. I know. So I'll tell you about, there was a sale, there was an online sale at Christie's of meteorites. And what made this sale special is that all of these meteorites looked very sculptural, looked very artistic in the way that they are made. And what the article was saying is that there was one in particular that was from a private collection, and it was found in Meteor Crater in Arizona, and it was over 50,000 years old, estimated at $150,000 to $250,000, and it sold for $237,500. And one of the reasons, it's not just because it's a meteorite or it's from space, is the sculptural and artistic appearance of the pieces. And I just posted this on my Facebook page, the article, and some of the photos of some of these meteorites, they do look sculptural and artistic in the way that they're done. And what they're saying is that those are the ones that in the marketplace people are finding very desirable and paying higher prices for. So it's not just rocks from space. It has to also have that artistic quality in order for it to really go to the stratosphere as far as the value goes. And a lot of these meteors, depending on their size, they can sell in the $5,000 to $25,000 price range. But once you get these larger, very sculptural looking ones, they become more desirable, which I found interesting. I thought that's an interesting way of classifying how the market is changing, where people are getting into this, but they are also looking for that artistic aesthetic in the pieces that they have, because I guess if you're going to pay that much money for a rock, it better look good.
Yeah, and you also better, it's becoming more and more critical. Know where stuff, what seems to have happened in the news business, let's just say, is the same thing that happened with day trading way back when. Mm-hmm. People got all confident with their sources of information and started broadcasting it wildly. And here we are. Because so many things in this day and age are so easily faked. People are going to have to really start doing interesting and far more intensive due diligence. Because whereas in the past you could, you could have some faith in the certificate or the chain, let's call it, the information chain.
Right. The chain of history of where it came from, right.
It is now, it's like your space rocks, with all due respect, could be my garden rocks.
No, absolutely. But the interesting thing with this is because of, they tested for the level of iron and what's in it and where it came from. Again, it goes to that chain of ownership. And that goes with anything that you're buying or selling. And there was, all of these pieces were coming from private collections of well-known collectors that have had these pieces authenticated, dated, carbon tested. I mean, all of that goes into it. Just like any type of collecting area, if you're collecting collector cars, you want to ask the question, are those parts all original, or are there, have it been put together? If you're doing any kind of artwork, is it a screen print? Is it a lithograph? Is it an original? Is it watercolor? Is it what is the medium? And you have to know what is the hierarchy as far as what brings more money and what doesn't, so that just because you're buying a Warhol, well, it could be a Warhol poster from the Tate that was from the 70s, which, you know, that's $1,000. But if it were the original image, then that's a whole lot more. So knowing where that falls within the hierarchy of what you are collecting also makes a big difference.
No question.
Which is cool.
No, and once again, some of these TV shows could really be, I ruled the world, I say this every morning at this point, could be reconfigured or reformatted to actually teach, this stuff.
This is the hard part, Jill, is that's they don't look at that as entertainment. And even when I was doing Cash in the Attic and some of Antiques Roadshow, not that much, I just did a presentation here in Hope Sound, and they were asking about my time in doing, the television stuff. And I would tell them that the producers would come to me and say, I need you to say it like this because this is part of the story. And I would say, no, you have to find a different story. I can't say that. That'll go right to my integrity. I need to help. This is what I do. And I have to be able to tell them this is what this is so that they understand what value is. And I held true to that. That's probably why I'm still not on television. But,
right. No, I completely understand. But fortunately in the cycle, yes. the way many, a long time ago, somebody said, well, look, the way to sound really, like you've got a good business, hire yourself an English assistant, and then, people will take your calls. And it used to be received wisdom, the best way to break a band was to take either an American band to Britain or vice versa, because you can't get it. It's just a way.
It's a novelty.
It's a novelty. Yeah. Exactly right. So many, and we could call in Mark Burnett for this, but many of the shows that have become really like Survivor, that are just part of the canon at this point, started out as basic Brit shows. And I'm thinking of, there was, what is their version of Cash in the Attic? I can't remember the name, but there was something called
Cash
Driving School. There was something called Driving School, which was just regular people trying to learn how to drive. And it didn't have a narrative other than the person getting flummoxed, and it was absolutely compelling television, just as maybe it was Cash in the Attic, but yeah. Just as going through the attic with an expert, you know, who possibly right. was able to pick out that Auntie Beatrice's plate was actually right. pretty worth selling and building a sale around that rather than right. just like, okay, everything is worth something, yay.
Right, right. And that was the difficulty here, was trying to build a story around an item that maybe was sentimental. And I mean, people can tell the truth. They know. And these family owners, they'd be like, we just want to get rid of all this. Wasn't there one piece you really want to hold on to? You know,
no,
and
no,
the producers
there isn't.
Were really
Please.
Trying to get them going.
Yes.
And they're not actors. You can't, you know, well, can you pretend that this is something... And, I mean, they would be going and I'd be watching the, you know, them tape certain things and I'd be like, oh, please, please. You know, so my narrative, I tried to maintain some sort of integrity and credibility. And that becomes very difficult. And the reality is that when you look at what's going on in the marketplace, too, that there are a lot of changes that are going on in the marketplace. And a lot of people don't stay in touch with that because that isn't what their business is. They just know I'm going to hold on to this because I was told it's valuable. And all of a sudden, 25 years go by and they said, okay, I'm ready to cash in. And we have to say, well, you should have done that 20 years ago and not now, because here's where the market is and here's where the change. And trying to get them to understand and show them. And sometimes they come around, sometimes they're defiant and say, no, I'll hold on to it then. Well, great. But as we had said on I think it was last week, you know, we've got two generations downsizing at the same time and 20-something, 30-somethings that don't want any of it. So I don't see that changing. This is where we are right now. And I see that as the trend for the next 5 years. So I hold on to it, but I don't see that it's going to come back with such a vengeance that they're going to be eating up and trying to get everything out of the marketplace at such a level that these prices are going to go back up to where they used to be. So it's
right.
really about monitoring.
It's about, you're absolutely right. It's about monitoring. It's also about understanding intrinsic value. And
yes.
sooner or later, I mean, I am noticing very quietly, you know, a slight shift to people wanting to know that. I suspect that we're at the beginning of... when I say return is not such a good, either returning on a certain level to, it's like, hey, this is valuable in this context. Here's why. And
right.
it has to be a certain, I think we're moving.
It's understanding, but I think what they're doing is people are using things differently. They're looking at it and saying, oh, okay, I can use this for this now. And it is kind of cool. Or if it's some sort of industrial or, you know, interesting type of item. But for the most part, a lot of, and I think Antiques Roadshow has a lot to do with this, because you see there's a lot of older stuff that's on it and older people, and younger people look at that and say, oh, it's all old stuff. I don't want any of that. And there's two sides to this. And I think it depends on where you are geographically too, because if you have an older house, and you do want to put in some interesting modern things, but also some older things, that mixes really well. And people can do that. I think the younger generation, they're willing to experiment like that, where the baby boomers and everything, it all had to be very uniform. And you didn't want to do that as much. And so we're at a very interesting time, because there's a lot of transition in the marketplace. And there's going to be a lot more that comes into the marketplace as people start passing on and more items start coming into the marketplace.
And that's going to be something that I'm going to look to you to be,
yeah.
you know, well, everyone.
Our finger on the pulse.
But also, you know, you are naturally entertaining, which is great. And I'm all for good, clean, uncontaminated information that is entertainingly presented, not just
right.
for the sake of, oh, well, let's try and gin up some excitement here, because you know so much of life I think this is the other thing that's happening almost psychologically. People are starting to understand that, you know, as an old friend said, what is it, 90% of life is I'm not going to get it right, but the fact is there's a heck of a lot of repetition, and you know, you just have to show up every day.
Rinse and repeat, baby. Rinse and repeat. It is all about that.
That's right. All right. We will. We said.
On that note, I guess we've lost Marshall.
Well, no,
Greg.
No, he's there. Here.
He was trying to find Greg.
I kept trying Greg, but it kept going blip 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 blip.
Oh.
Blip 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 blip.
Yeah. You know what? I wonder if he has his computer. I wonder if it was there was a Skype update. I don't know. I'll track him down. I'll tell him we missed him.
Yeah. Oh, just say that there were five or six calls people were asking for him.
And I will do that. And he'll be back next week.
All right. Have a good week.
Hey, you guys too. Take care.
Take care.
Bye.
That is Tim Luke. Mine is Greg Schramm, the appraisal guy. The Frick or Frack of Nick and Knack.
One day, you know what? It's 10 years on. We're never going to know which one's which.
TQAG.com on the web.